Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Since we're talking about brain health, I think it's only fitting to mention hydration, which I think is one of the most neglected aspects of our health that everyone could pay a little more attention to. Now, I'm not just talking about drinking enough water. I'm also talking about making sure that we're getting in the electrolytes that we're naturally losing throughout the day. That is why Jen and I use Element electrolyte mix packets so that we're getting all the amazing benefits that can come from optimizing the sodium, potassium, and magnesium in our bodies. And this includes things like helping with sleep, brain fog, fatigue, just giving us that mental clarity that we might not understand why we don't have it, why we're missing this. And not only does Element help get all these electrolytes in, it tastes so delicious. So it keeps you coming back to your water all throughout the day without even thinking about it. If you go down to the link in the show notes, that's just drinkelement.com/optimal. That's drinkelement, spelled out LMNT.com/optimal. You get a free sample packet with every single order so you can try all the flavors and make sure you know which one you like best when you inevitably come back to get more. Check out the link in the show notes and we'll get into the podcast episode. Excited to introduce our guest today, Thorin Stevens, who is a scientist, researcher, and entrepreneur with a background in molecular biology and a career spanning health technology and human performance optimization. He skis over 80 plus days per season, competes in triathlon nationals, and is developing a TED Talk on advancing human potential through AI, neuroscience, and brain-computer interfaces. We're excited to chat with him today about his new company, Brain One, where we talk about optimizing brain training, neural performance, and habit creation. Let's get into it. All right, Thorin, thank you so much for being here today with us. We're excited to talk about what you all do at Brain One. I know that you kind of started in this space of brain training and neurotraining and have expanded more into general behavior change and really how to help people change behaviors and have it stick. And so I know that's kind of the secret sauce to how we become healthy.
100%. Yeah. The human change is always the hardest part of the equation. It's usually not the technology, but the human behavior. So, yeah. And so happy to dive in or?
Yeah. I mean, well, and I just want to know a little bit of your background because from molecular biology, like how did you go from here to really diving into the brain and then, you know, habit change, which is the most difficult thing for people to create?
Absolutely. So, yeah, my background's in molecular and cell biology. I got my degree in biotechnology and was debating on a PhD and decided to jump into drug development. So all of my initial research was in the lab working with brands like GlaxoSmithKline, but doing small molecule drug therapeutics. So we were looking for novel mechanisms, various areas of disease. Infectious disease was one I spent a number of years in and learned a lot about Candida albicans, which I'm sure you guys are familiar with, and Aspergillus nigellans, another fungal. Another fungal species. And loved the work. I mean, it was really, really awesome. This was like in the early 2000s. It was when the human genome was just sequenced, essentially. And, you know, we were so optimistic that with the human genome sequence, we'd unlock, you know, all the capabilities of drug development. But that really wasn't the case, right? Because what we were learning at the time, you know, epigenetics was still fairly novel. And then, of course, you have the concept of, you know, proteomics, right? So the genome, the proteome, and then in between the transcriptome and the epigenome, right? So, 30 to 70% of your gene expression is dependent on your environment. It depends on the tissue. There's some caveats to that statistic, but, you know, generally speaking, so we have a good amount of control over the expression of our DNA through the environment and behavior, you know, fundamentally. And, so I was in drug development a number of years, and then I moved to LA from San Francisco, and I began work as a digital analyst. And what I was studying there was really around user behavior online. So understanding patterns, building hypotheses, and doing rapid iteration and testing. And in my 20s, what I found is I could genetically optimize nearly any model organism. But then in my 30s, I could really optimize any human behavior online. And those were the early days of social. Back when the Twitter API, the Facebook API was open, you could download everything. But I also saw how the data was being used fairly nefariously. And, you know, as we're hearing more and more today, you know, the impacts of social on, you know, young teenagers, as an example, none of that was a surprise, you know, unfortunately. But so as my research progressed, now I'm also an Ironman distance triathlete. And I began, I went to school for competitive snowboarding and skiing. And so that's very much in my DNA. But I was never really a runner. And one day my mother is like, get out of bed. We're going to go do a Susan G. Komen 10K. And we started off doing 10Ks together, half marathons, all the way to marathons. And then we both went into Ironman distance triathlons, actually. She's actually done more than me. I've done a couple. I've done two fulls. I've done, I don't know, a dozen plus halves. She's done like six fulls. But anyway, and but that was kind of the impetus. But it was through triathlon training that I really began to see the value of a health protocol. And that's really what our company Brain One is based around. And so first, to define what is a health protocol, it's really just a structured set of what we call micro habits. What's a micro habit? In the world of triathlon, you have swim, bike, and run. So all the things you're doing to ultimately train for swimming, biking, or running. But then you also have other nutritional micro habits. You have things like hydration, you have electrolytes, you have carbohydrates, protein to some degree. And if any one of those variables is off in a race, then ultimately you will not finish. And but that was like kind of one of these you know, epiphany moments for me was training for triathlons. And then again, using these types of health protocols.
Now, when it comes to the brain, we can't skip that a lot of people are taking supplements for brain health, for longevity, for things that are going to optimize what we're doing long into the future, right? However, a lot of these supplement companies are not clinically dosed. And this is where I originally found Needed and why I have to just mention it here, because it is about getting adequate dosage so that the clinical effects that are actually studied in a lot of these supplements have the effect that you're going for. Otherwise, it is not worth your money. This is when I found it. I found Needed when I was trying to conceive. And a lot of people were like, but why do I have to take 8 pills? And it seems like a lot. That's because they're going for optimal levels here. They are not doing the bare minimum. They're going above and beyond and giving you the adequate dosing. And I've found this across all of their supplementation. They go above and beyond to really give you the most benefit of what you're taking. And I need to say that they go beyond just pregnancy and postpartum. They go into women's health. They even have some support for men's health as well. Some of the biggest players that I think are going to be huge for brain support is taking their omega-3s, their sleep and relaxation, and their cognitive support. They have so much to offer over at Needed. So if you have not checked it out yet, I want you to go over to thisisneeded.com and you can use code OPTIMAL. You'll get 20% off your first order. That's thisisneeded.com. Use code OPTIMAL and you'll get 20% off your first order. Okay, let's head back in.
Just fast forward. So, you know, my career, user behavior, and then I was going into private equity and I did that for a number of years. And then I really wanted to ground back into my purpose and the purpose of really science. And that was very, very clear to me. And I had an incident. I live here in Colorado. I'm a very aggressive skier, snowboarder. And I was doing a backside 5 and I slipped and I broke my clavicle. And I went to the number one orthopedic in the United States, the Stedman Institute. And they're like, yeah, your clavicle's broken. Here you go. And they threw me a sling. And so my recovery protocol for the clavicle was quite literally immobilization. You know, you don't move the arm. I'm like, this is it, guys? And she's like, yep, see you in 6 weeks. And it just felt weird to me. And I was just formulating Brain One then. And I went to my network and I was like, guys, broke my clavicle. What do you recommend? And many nutritionists, dietitians in our you know, ecosystem were like, oh, bone broth, you know, collagen. And I was doing big bison stews. And then I also did this frequency treatment called PEMF, PEMF, if you guys are familiar with that. It's like a hyper-localized, you know, essentially electrical current through the bone, you know, doesn't hurt, non-invasive. And long story short, I went back to Stedman and she said, come back in 6 weeks. I went back in 4 because I was traveling. She's like, oh my gosh, your bone's completely fused. It's a miracle. And she's like, what have you been doing? And I was like, doctor, I've been focusing on my nutrition. And the doctor looked me in the face. She's like, we never would have thought of that. And that's when I knew something was terribly wrong. As I'm sure you guys are aware, you know, within our health system, really, you know, doctors are not taught nutrition, which is insane. And so full circle, as I was developing, I knew I wanted to go back into science. And I saw initially this massive need within brain. And there's actually no major apps. You know, there's some brain training apps that have like brain games, but there's really nothing that looks at the holistic human through microhabits. And that's when I began to formulate the vision for Brain One. And yeah, it's just been really, really fun from there. But I can tell you a bit more about the process. But any questions on that? Or yeah, please.
Yeah.
No, that's fascinating. Tons of questions, of course. And yeah. I mean, the frustration that you hit on the head at the end, where we're talking about bone growth. We're talking about physiologic processes in our body. And when we were in physical therapy school, like all of these higher level, you know, degrees are going more and more into specialization. And the thing that I started to realize, the further down the path you get into specialization, you start to forget your physiology 101. You start to forget that, oh, the things that we do, the things we take into our body impact our physiology, which then impact our specialty. And I always said, like, the further a doctor gets into school, they forget those 101 classes, because it's just like normal physiology just seems to poof out the door, and all they have are their protocols and their algorithms that they follow.
100%.
Based on common practice, which is generally outdated. That's, again, a soapbox that you touched on that I just had to mention. I also am fascinated because as I got further into PT school, everyone else was talking about their specialization. I'm going into orthopedics. I want to specialize in the shoulder. Sure. I started telling people I wanted to specialize in behavior change.
Awesome. Yes.
Because and they would look at me with this glazed over look like, what do you mean? And I'm like, the fact that you don't know what I mean is the problem. And so I love that became your whole purpose. Mm-hmm. And it makes so much sense to me that it started with neurodevelopment. It started with the brain, because regardless of where this changes that you're making in your body, whether it has to do with nutrition or exercise, it's a brain game. And we have to address the brain first. So talk to me about, because I feel like this whole neuro training or brain training, it's becoming much more popularized, but you only hear the neuro hackers or the biohackers talking about it. So I feel like for the general person, it's tough for them to grasp. Why is this important to me in my everyday life?
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, we start with, you know, again, the foundation, right? So like, if you want to be neurologically optimized, nutrition, exercise, sleep, stress, and some level of connection, whether it's to yourself, to God, to your family, community. So those are, you know, as we've literally analyzed, I mean, at this point, thousands of protocols, every major protocol in longevity as an example. And it comes down to those pretty basic pillars. And you could over-index in one or the other. It depends, Peter Attia versus Brian Johnson, whatever. But those are really the basic pillars, right? And so if you want to be neurologically optimized, nutrition, exercise, sleep, or stress, you know, if you're not sleeping, then there's absolutely no way. It's just not possible. You could, you know, be doing all the nootropics in the world and all the brain training in the world. I mean, you're going to get there a little bit, but, you know, you have to have that foundation. And so that's where we start with our protocols. And then from there, then you can really do the fine tuning, you know, essentially. But that's really the basis of how we think about, you know, the world, the ecosystem.
Which is the foundation of everything. Like, no matter everything. What system you're going to go into, no matter if it's addressing pain or, you know, whatever it is, those are always the fundamentals that no one wants to take into account, because it's the non-sexy things.
The non-sexy solutions.
That sometimes are the hardest.
Sexy.
Once you start to realize what they can do for you, they become very sexy.
Yes. I mean, but it's sometimes the hardest things to create change around. So how does someone even begin to address some of these foundational things within their life?
Yeah, absolutely. So our approach is using CBT, so different types of cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, mechanisms, cue and rewards. We, of course, have a digital platform. But it could be as fundamental as just starting with a list, you know, like, I mean, I'm a nerdy scientist. I have like 70 of these types of notebooks. And, you know, it's like when you wake up in the morning, what is your daily routine? You know, the protocol, again, it's just a fancy word for your routine, really, you know, and what does that look like? And you can do the research, and I'm sure you guys have coaching here, you know, it's like, what are the 10 things someone should do every day, you know, in the morning? Well, hydration, circadian regulation. I mean, that's number one with Huberman. It's like literally the number one thing he recommends, right? again, good sleep. And so that's usually where we start, is just the documentation. You know, what is your goal? And then what are the things that you do every morning? And then you can optimize, you know, ultimately from there. But if you're not doing the basics, like, you know, doing all these extraneous stuff, it doesn't, you know, necessarily really matter.
So yeah. For somebody, I mean, you mentioned circadian rhythm, sure. regulation. That's one of the main things. For the person who's listening, who's like, I got no idea what that means. Like, what is something that they can do to start focusing on this thing that they may have never even known exists?
Yeah. So generally, as you guys are aware, the hardest part is the human change. So start small, you know, start with 3 micro habits. What is a micro habit, right? So morning sunlight, you know, and you can Google this. We're happy to share a protocol, but it's literally just going out into the sun in the morning and getting direct sunlight, ideally for 15, 20 minutes. You know, that's simple. That is a micro habit, right? And then just doing that routinely every morning. And what's so crazy is that 15 minutes in the morning actually affects your, you know, all the way down to your HRV, you know, your heart rate variability and how you sleep, you know, through the evening. And we've seen some really interesting correlations there. But so generally we start very small, and it's like, it's really hard for humans to adopt one thing, let alone 3, let alone 5, you know? So we're all about small incremental changes, but then they have the compounding, you know, essentially impact. And that's what's so critical.
And you mentioned the compounding impact. I mean, some people may think, oh, 15 minutes, I don't even have 15 minutes in my morning. Yep. But if you start to, like you said, make your list, what are you spending that hour before you go to work doing? For me, it's like, I get up with my kid. There was a period where I would go out with our older son, who was always the first one up. Yeah. We'd go sit outside. I would grab my thing of water that we could both drink together. And we'd sit and we'd watch the sunrise, and we would sip on the water, and maybe we'd get down on our backyard and do a little mobility, which I'm doing the mobility. He's running around being a toddler, but there we go. There's 3 of them knocked out in those 10 minutes I would normally be laying on the couch with him.
100%. And also connection with your son, you know, in that instance, right? So like it's like your 4 micro habits right there. And so that's where you can find the efficiency. But yeah, that's a really, really good example.
And I think it's hard though, when I'm going to take me, for example, up multiple times in the middle of the night with a baby. And so it's like, it's hard to even start to think of like implementing new things when you're just in survival mode most of the day. So how does a woman who's going through different life stages, whether it is pregnancy, sleep is interrupted, postpartum, sleep is interrupted, like all these different things, but wanting to feel healthier, wanting to feel like you have more brain power throughout the day.
Sure.
Like, what are some of the things that they could start to implement?
Yeah. So, you know, we think about like, what are the active things? What are more of the passive micro habits that you can do, right? So like, let's say again, sleep's the foundation. Like sleep is literally the number one longevity habit, like hack. I mean, that's it, sleep, right? So how do you then sleep better? So small things, right? Like cold environment, you know, nightshades, you know, these are things you don't even need to think about. I sleep, especially when I'm traveling, but I have a, you know, here at the house, we have an air purifier, but when I'm on the road, I use white noise, you know? And so these are things, again, all you do is routinely turn them on, and then you don't have to think about them. So even if you are getting up in the middle of the night, you know, you already have at least some of these, you know, areas fortified as part of your sleep schedule. Of course, I mean, with, you know, in the case with children, it's a lot harder, but, you know, I went from going to bed, you know, I grew up in Silicon Valley and on the grind and I was up all night and And now it's like, we try to go to bed at like 9 o'clock, you know, like going to bed as early as possible. And then that coupled with the morning sun and, you know, just resetting your circadian rhythms, you know, essentially. So those are all kind of generally things you can do. And again, you get up in the middle of the night and, you know, you just have to work through that until you find additional stability. And the other thing that we're big evangelists of are wearables. And so we have over 300 wearables in the Brain One platform. We're agnostic. I mean, I generally sleep with an Aura. I usually use my Garmin when I'm doing training, and then I have a Whoop and, you know, but I what I've seen really helpful actually with a lot of our clients is people starting to use wearables, and then you start to understand your patterns. You know, again, HRV, resting heart rate, like all of the basics. And then even, you know, to the question, Jen, like, how long are you actually sleeping? I mean, you know, you can quantify that. Like, yes, you have to get up, but then you at least look at the totality, you know, how much actual rest are you getting in the different phases and so forth. And, you know, you just do the best you can. But I'm a big fan, again, of using data throughout these processes, because, again, that's, you know, it allows you to then manage, monitor, and optimize, you know, the just your overarching goals and in the process and actually have data to support it.
Totally.
There was a time and period where we tried out Oura Rings and it was not when we had children. So it would be interesting. It would be interesting to see how that varies now that we have kids. And to the person listening, as we get into this conversation, we have now listed off a dozen or 20 things that you could or should be doing. And this is when I feel like it starts to sound overwhelming for people, where I want to then reiterate and repeat back to what you said at the beginning. It starts with one. It starts with one, and it can be as simple as turning down your thermostat when you go to bed.
That's it. Yeah.
That's the micro habit. And then that's where it builds and stacks. Mm-hmm. And this is where I want to ask you about, how does the technology that you've developed help somebody start small and then build and stack?
Yeah, 100%. So we, let me just preface where we started from. So, you know, we began in brain, and actually, you know, peak performance was a big component. But then we began to get asked so much about dementia, as an example. And so we'll take a peer-reviewed scientific paper and run it through our AI, and then literally build editorial as well as a protocol people can follow. And our goal, my goal, is just to give this away. We'll give these protocols away. Dementia prevention, 30 to 40% of global dementia cases could be, you know, essentially, I don't want to say eradicated, but supported through lifestyle changes. And these are things that all of us can do to a degree. You know, if you live in a city, maybe air pollution's, you know, not an option. But things like connection, community, you know, TBI support, you know, and so forth. And there's a whole list I'd be happy to share, or the audience can look at Lancet 2024. But that's where we started, where, again, the concept of evidence-based protocols, and then translating those basically just into a tracker. And that's it. That's all that Brain One is, really, fundamentally. However, then we started layering in, you know, the different, once you have the tracker, then you get into the nudging. And we have different types of nudges. We have SMS, we have push, we have in-app, we have email. And humans are all different. But that's where the behavior chains come into play. And then the concept of cue and rewards and educating humans to know, you know, why do they turn down the thermostat? Like, what is the benefit? What is the benefit about getting direct sunlight in the morning and circadian regulation? And what does that mean to your body physiologically? And so that's part of, you know, what we you know, support, essentially, is the, through the habit change are the nudges and, you know, the touch points, essentially. And we're experimenting with this constantly. You know, like, one example is now, you can get up in the morning, and even if, you know, cause part of it, like, we're big fans of digital detox. So if you don't want to open up the app, then you can opt in for a SMS, and it'd be like, you know, hey Dom, here are the three things you got to do this morning: circadian regulation, connection with your son, and hydration. And that's just a starting point. So that's a really integral part of, you know, of the process, essentially. And then we're layering in some really cool gamification stuff. I've wanted to do this for a while, but the concept of doing, like, heart rate variability leaderboards with your friends and family, or who among your friends and family have the least amount of phone time, you guys, the least amount of screen time. Like, those are the leaderboards we should be putting to the forefront. You know, it's not like followers and counts and all of that, you know, stuff. It's literally, you know, more endearing things. So that's more on the gamification side, but it's more, you know, community-based gamification. And so that's something we're really thinking and working through. But there's been a lot of excitement about those types of modalities.
Oh, yeah. And that's where technology actually becomes beneficial, rather than the alternative, which is what you were kind of talking about with screen time and how much, I mean, it is getting ridiculous, right? Even for us, it's like we notice how much we're on our phones or using our phones or connected. And
we're saying all this as we're on a podcast staring at a computer, and then I'm going to go and do more work on the computer and record this and that. And it's crazy. Oh. It's hard to get away from.
So it's like, how much is it, particularly social media, how much is that impacting our brain, and what is that doing to us?
You know, when I began doing this research, this is like early 2010, again, when, you know, you could download everything off Twitter and Facebook, and it was all open. And then they closed it all down because they realized how valuable the data was. And, you know, neurologically, physiologically, it's highly detrimental, but this wasn't new. You know, again, I saw this, and like, I deleted my Facebook account in, like, I think it was 2014. Because I saw how the data was being used, you know, within my family, within my nieces. You know, it's absolutely tragic, ultimately. And what we've seen is, again, a shortening of the attention span. You know, I think it went from whatever at the time, it was like 18 seconds. Now I think it's like 12 seconds. And what does that do? It's this, you know, kind of endorphin rush, you know, this cycle where we're constantly checking our phones and notifications and all of that. And it just, I believe it's extremely unhealthy, you know, and what's worse is we're further getting optimized within the algorithm to show you more of that content, you know, the rage base, sensationalism, all of those pieces. And then it just literally facilitates ad sales and growth, you know, for these technology companies. So I think it's a major issue. I'm not saying it's all negative, and it's, you know, it's certainly not. For me personally, you know, I'm much more of a Strava guy. If you guys know Strava, you know, for exercising, that is more along the lines of what, you know, where I actually do things regularly. And part of it is just so I can track my own exercising. But yeah, I mean, at least there, I think there's more of a community aspect to it. But we were the generation that gave away all of our behavioral data, you know, again, in the early 2000s, kind of MySpace, but then, you know, with the advent of Facebook and these larger social networks. And so, you know, it's tragic ultimately, but we gave away all that data. You know, it's gone. And now there's also interest in neurological data. So that's been a, kind of a focus as well. Protection of neurological data, state, federal level. But there's also a lot of positive and good from this as well. So, you know, I try to be moderate in the views.
Right. And what can someone do if say they're like, I know how bad it is. I know that it's like something I'm addicted to. What can someone start doing to, you know, because we're talking about adding in new behaviors, right? But yeah, what can someone do to like change yeah. other behaviors that they want to take away?
Delete the app, you know, delete the app one day a week. Or, I mean, there's now that, you know, there's a number of apps out there that will like not allow you to access it. But, you know, for me, I mean, again, I try not to have social media apps on my phone as much as now, of course, you know, we need to have it for business and so forth. But, you know, other ones are news, you know, news apps, just as toxic. When I was dating, as an example, I'd find myself just wasting all this time on dating apps, you know? And so what I found is if I just delete it, then you don't even think about it. And yeah, maybe come back, but like give yourself a break. Now that's more drastic. Of course, again, you can just like not look at the app, but you know, just depending on where your willpower is. But yeah, literally just deleting some of these things can be really, really healthy and start small. And again, it's not to say there's no value, but you know, even if it's for a couple of days a week, that's an awesome start. You know, but when you're on it every single day, I mean, especially with the toxicity, you know, and the algorithm optimizations, it's yeah, it's very, very unhealthy.
That would be an interesting study if you forced somebody to, between each use of a certain social media app, delete it when they're done using it and then re-download it. They had no limit on how much they could use it, but all they had to do was delete it and then re-download it between uses. I can't imagine the reduction in usage overall just from that one barrier. And then you 100%. Could have a third group that would have to go to their computer and open up their computer and type in the website. Like it would be pretty crazy to see the number in the reduction in time and usage for that. But
yeah.
That's 100%. Aside.
And then, you know, what we can now measure is like, you know, again, if you have a wearable, we could look at that, you know, over time and then see across those periods, what does that do to your heart rate variability, you know, or your ability to focus, you know, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. I think the data would be pretty compelling. We haven't looked at that study yet. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know,
that's crazy.
Pretty awesome to think about.
So I feel like, speaking of social media, there's all sorts of people out there on what I would call the toxic side that just have these more masculine seeming like willpower. You just got to have willpower and discipline and be motivated. And that's how you're going to change your behavior. So why do willpower or motivation based strategies fail where something where you have more of a protocol succeeds?
Well, I think it's structure. You know, the example I usually use is again, Noom. Are you guys familiar with Noom weight loss app, right?
Yep.
So Noom is currently valued over, I think it's like 4 billion at the moment, probably higher now. And then you have Weight Watchers that literally went bankrupt 6 months ago. You know, so why is Noom again worth 6 billion, whereas Weight Watchers was, you know, literally went bankrupt? In part because of the methodologies. You know, Weight Watchers, you're like counting calories, colors. It was just antiquated. And I don't know if it ever really worked. I mean, I'm sure certainly people lost weight. But something like Noom, where again, you're following, you know, a structured protocol and a format, and then you're seeing results, and then it has, you know, the CBT nudges and the gamification and all of those pieces. I mean, you're going to be much more successful there. Now, also granted, Noom, you know, really embraced GLP-1 sooner too. So that's part of their success, let's be honest. But in general, you know, I come back to the, you know, really the very first point, like people, you know, you can't manage what you can't measure. And so if you're measuring these things and you're starting to see, you know, the progress, then you have more data. And, but yeah, I mean, willpower is really, really hard. And it's really, really hard to change one thing, but that's why we always try to start small. We have different personas of people that join, you know, from maniacs like myself, where I have, you know, 20 micro habits a day, to, you know, literally one or two things is a great starting point. But at least you're making change. Like one or two things is awesome. Small incremental progress, you know, like that's the biggest thing. And then consistency. And then always thinking about the why, you know, like why do you want to make these changes, you know, for your family, for yourself, whatever it is. But yeah, I think those are some of the major elements that we see.
1,000%. And I think, like you said in the toward the beginning, about educating on why these things are important. Why would you be getting sunlight in your eyes? Without understanding that, someone's going to drop off for sure.
But of course. Yeah.
Consistency.
Yep.
Is that like, I have to do this every day? Because what happens when what I see is that people then beat themselves up, right? Oh, and then I have a shame spiral. I stop doing it because I missed a day, I missed a week, whatever that means. So what does consistency really look like on a day-to-day basis? And what and how can someone strive to be more consistent?
Yeah, 100%. Again, it's starting small, right? So if we talk about even just circadian regulation, direct sunlight, right? That's the micro habit. How do you get better at that one thing? Start with twice a week, you know, commit to yourself, put it on a piece of paper, you know, put it on a list, put it on your, you know, board, whatever it is, put it in the mirror. I mean, you know, circadian regulation, direct sunlight, you know, for 15 minutes every day. It doesn't get any easier than that one, right? I mean, literally go and sit outside, ideally in nature, you know, with direct sunlight, no sunglasses. And then, you know, ideally it's every day though. You know, you want to get to 7 days a week. Now that's hard, kids and work and, you know, I live in a valley here in Colorado, so we don't even get direct sunlight. It comes over the ridge at 9 a.m. You know, I'm up at 5. So, but ideally it's within, you know, 30 minutes, an hour of waking, you know, you get the direct sunlight. But start small, you know, 1 or 2 days a week, you know, go to 3 to 4, go to 5 to 7, you know, and then that's the same with all of these micro habits. And again, it's, that's why some of the stuff, you know, we're not as humans, unless you're, you know, you guys are very fortunate that you studied this stuff. But most humans have no idea, you know, literally like, oh, like how much hydration do I really get? I mean, the flipping of the food pyramid, which generally I think is good. I mean, I thought it was pretty ridiculous that we had this massive influx of carbohydrates and then obesity and then, you know, diabetes and all these things. So I do think the flipping of the food pyramid generally is positive. But, you know, people are not taught these things really. Like maybe you're taught them, you know, early on in your life. Which is why, you know, podcasts such as this, and, you know, you got the maniacs like Brian Johnson over here. You know, I was looking at it as a spectrum. I mean, he's, you know, he's way over here. You know, most humans are over here. You know, I'm kind of in the middle. You know, I'm sure you guys are somewhere in that spectrum, you know. So, but you also have to meet yourself, you know, where you're at. And humans have to do that too. And to your point, you know, you don't like the shaming, you know, that's not healthy either. So, you know, you have to also have just forgiveness. And myself, as much as I train, you know, like I was at a dinner last night in LA, and, you know, we had ice cream sandwiches at the end, and it's okay, you know, like it's okay to have an ice cream, like it was a quarter of one, but still, you know, to splurge every once in a while. And I think that's partly what we've also seen, is having a little bit of flexibility in these types of protocols really goes a long way. And not being too hard on yourself. Because again, if you come out of the gate, you're like, new year, new me, my resolutions, you know, I'm going to lose this weight and da-da-da. And then I'm going to do this every day. And maybe you will for like 2 or 3 weeks. And then, you know, what does that look like in February forward? So small increments.
Yeah. I mean, we're recording this towards the end of January. And so how many people listening are still going strong with your New Year's resolutions, and how many people might need a tool to help with those micro habits to help make things stick a little bit more. And I think that you were sneaky about your placement in the valley. Does this have something to do with you being a triathlete and you just need to bike or run up the valley to get your sunlight at 5 a.m.?
You know, you're not wrong, actually. and of course, it changes on the time of the year, but yeah.
that's too funny. So talking about the future of technology now, and it's hard for us to talk about technology these days without acknowledging AI and where it's at now and how rapidly it is advancing. Yep. And I know you're a big proponent of how AI can help to optimize and maximize the human potential rather than replacing it.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, I've been doing AI research for quite a while, you know, maybe about a decade. I mean, we were doing production level AI 10 years ago. I was working with a man named Dr. Galen Buckwalter, who is a preeminent AI scientist. He was the chief scientist at eHarmony, and eHarmony was doing AI 20 years ago, you know, like marrying millions and millions of people that came through eHarmony using AI. And literally, that's like, we're talking, I mean, this is early 2000s, you know? So like, yeah, definitely over 20 years ago. And their primary metric was actually marriage and then propensity for divorce, which they were trying to avoid. So, you know, even back then, there were great uses for AI. You know, my general feeling is you need to understand these tools. And I think they can be absolutely benefits and also, you know, negatives as well. We use AI in a few different ways. One is, again, like our core premise is around taking evidence, like peer-reviewed scientific papers, and then building evidence-based protocols. So dementia prevention, and I'll share this with you guys, but again, the 14 behavioral modifications that all of our parents should be following, you know, our grandparents, I mean, literally, and people in their, you know, 30s, 40s, and 50s should be thinking about now. You know, you don't want to be doing this in your 50s, 60s, and 70s when you already have amyloids and, you know, tau proteins. You know, you want to do this immediately, like as soon as possible. And again, these just become principles, really, you know, like life principles that you follow, like getting direct sunlight in the morning or always taking the stairs or, you know, hydration, you know, things like that. And so that's where we started again, was we would take a protocol or a paper, we'd run it through the AI, we generate editorial that would be really user-friendly such that my grandma could read it, and then also generate protocol that, again, any human could follow. And that was one of the first applications. And we went from 5 papers to 50 to 500. And then I was like, okay, guys, let's just pause for a second, because there's going to be people out there that have solved this at scale. And now I'm actually an advisor of a company called Roadrunner AI, and they literally have indexed 100 million citations across PubMed and NCBI, so the biggest science repositories. And so what does that mean? Well, now we can go and be like, you know, give me the top, you know, 20 or let's say 1,000 papers written on perimenopause that focus in lifestyle changes over the last 5 years. And then we can generate all of, you know, literally get all of those protocol or all those papers and then synthesize it and then generate a protocol that your, you know, ultimately your listeners could follow. So that's how we're thinking about it. That's like one application. Now, another application, I'll give you two more. One that's very unique is the concept of adaptive AI. So you can come in and let's say, again, you know, perimenopause comes up on a weekly basis, right? You know, there's not enough research behind this. There's not enough support. So what can women do to help them through these periods? So the concept is you could basically pick a protocol, you put it into your portal, essentially, and then you can, you know, then you have different types of assessments. It's all opt-in. You also have biometrics, you have biomarkers. And then what happens is the, we use what's called adaptive AI. And then the protocol, we start to make recommendations based on your behavior. You know, did you do the thing? Did you, you know, maybe you're not doing the cold plunging, then why don't we recommend another autonomic parasympathetic regulatory micro habit like cold plunging, or let's say, you know, breath work would be a better example. So so that concept of, again, though, adaptive AI health protocol is that the protocol actually adapts to, you know, you, Jen, based on your usage and your biometrics, biomarkers, you, Dom, based on the same, so that's something else that's really exciting. And so what we've been testing is people can come in, they have their protocol, and then every, you know, Monday they wake up, and then we'd have new recommendations for them based on their prior week's adherence or, again, biometrics, biomarkers, and so forth. So that's really exciting. And I'll give you one other. So one of our chief scientist advisors, he's technically our chief brain futurist is his title, is a man named Dr. Galen Buckwalter. So again, Galen is a very renowned AI scientist. He's also a quadriplegic, and he has 6 neural implants, you guys. So he has 1 in the prefrontal, 5 in the neocortex. And so why? So he's you know, in a wheelchair, he had a tragic accident when he was 17, jumped off a bridge, paralyzed. And technically, it's a clinical trial at Caltech. And the surgery's nuts. And so again, you guys have heard of Neuralink. So it's similar. This is it's an 8x8 chip. And then each chip both measures and then excites down to a single neuron basis, which is insane. We've never had this granularity of measurement, like literally, right? And these are on his brain, measuring his brain activity. It's just insane. And it's on a single neuron basis. And so we'll go to a clinical trial at Caltech, and you know, Galen comes in, and they literally, he has these 3 holes in his skull, and that's where the electrodes essentially are connected. And then they screw on essentially, it's an interface that then connects his brain to the internet. you know, and I'm not like exaggerating, this is right now. And then Galen's using his brain to control a robotic arm, you know, again, alleviating him and his, you know, like the, you know, his condition that he can actually have, you know, full capabilities. And it's just so, so beautiful. And so that's another, you know, aspect of the AI. And that's called BCI or brain computer interfaces. And that's certainly the future. You know, people who are paralyzed, who can't speak, can now talk to their partners, again, just using their brain. And we are the generation that's now seeing the intersection of biology and machines. And so, you know, while we should also be cautious, you know, in these, you know, in these times, it's also good to be, I think, optimistic. And, you know, this can really help a lot of people as well.
I mean, I think that's some of the most exciting AI that I've seen out there is what it can do for people who are in these conditions or haven't been able to use certain body parts, haven't been able to talk in certain ways, or have had major accidents and their life has completely changed. And it's like so cool to see what is possible.
100%. Being able to build neural workarounds for Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's, any of these chronic neurodegenerative diseases. Yeah, such cool applications, like you said, that we can be very optimistic about in all of these, you know, applications. So it's cool, but it even you just talking about it, it sounds very Matrix-y or very, you know, sci-fi-y, which is crazy because those are the movies that we watched growing up. And now we're right there. So
we're literally right there.
I know that one thing you mentioned even before we started is moving in more into women's health. And you talk about the female brain revolution. And can you elaborate a little bit more on what that means and what you all are doing
absolutely. At Brainwave? So again, you know, one question I have is, you know, why does nearly everyone I know have an autoimmune condition, thyroid? You know, my mother's hyper, my sister's hypo. You know, it's absolutely tragic and something needs to be done, period. And I have one of our investors, you know, the other day, she's like, yeah, autoimmune's the new cancer. And like that blew my mind, like literally that framing, right? Because it's so common and it's everywhere. It's absolutely pervasive. So, you know, we've really been diving into protocols that can help the women and the family, you know, the friends in our lives and so forth. And focusing on areas like perimenopause, menopause, PCOS, endometriosis. And, you know, these are, you know, essentially just peer reviewed, driven, you know, essentially protocols that people can follow to help through these, you know, these areas, you know, these, you know, times of their lives, basically. And we really try to focus more on the behavioral side. You know, what can you do from a behavioral modification? But of course, that isn't everything. So that's really been kind of the focus, though. And you know, we hear a lot about brain fog as an example. And you know, I gave a talk recently at a conference, and it was all female CEOs. And you know, the concept of brain fog comes up, you know, repeatedly. You know, we've heard the term menobrain. I don't know how prevalent that is, but you know, when you're going through menopause, just the brain fog associated, and you know, the neurological impacts, you know, of going through these physiological and, you know, endocrinological changes, you know, essentially as the hormones in your body are really shifting. So what does that look like to have a, you know, essentially a structured support, you know, essentially framework that you can follow to get you through these times? And really excited about it. I mean, I think it's, again, such an under, you know, utilized area of, or just research of human health. So, but yeah, that's something we're excited about.
It's so great to be able to see that this is getting more attention, that there's so much more support now when women are going through these different stages, because it's just something that has been a grit and bear, just kind of pushed through, and, you know, and so being able to have more protocols, more support around it, I think is so necessary, along with, you know, having the availability to hormones now, having the availability to have conversations with your doctor and see other things. When it comes to some of these protocols, can you give just like two or three non-negotiables when it comes to entering perimenopause? What are some really beneficial things that women can start doing today if they are starting to feel dysregulated in their body?
Yeah, one that we continue to hear a lot is, and this is a little surprising, but is just even the power of connection, you know, as a micro habit, which, you know, I'm a nerdy scientist. I'm somewhat social, but, you know, but just the power of connection as an example, which sounds fundamental. And again, what does that mean? Well, it could be connecting with other humans in a peer group, could be a book club, chess club, you know, whatever it is. But the power of connection comes up regularly. And that's both for women's health, but also just, you know, neurological optimization as well. So I would say that would be one off the cuff. But happy to share a couple protocols with you guys. And yeah, would love to get your feedback.
Yeah.
No, that'd be fantastic. Be, I mean, I'd love to look at it. Like I said, very early on when I was still in school, I was saying, I want to specialize in behavior change because that's what I started to realize.
That's what's most important.
Move the needle for people when it came to their pain conditions, especially those that were of chronic, you know, or persistent nature. And so, man, we really appreciate the work you're doing. It's super exciting stuff on the cutting edge of technology and human development. Where can people go to learn more about it or to utilize the platform?
Yeah, so currently we're still under our beta, but they can go to brain.one and then brainfitness1 is our socials. And if you guys want to do an optimal body protocol, we'd be happy to partner with you. And, you know, we could crank through a couple and you could just literally give them away. But yeah, we're really about evangelizing the science, you know, all the way through to something that someone can drive action from. You know, that's the key. But yeah, those are some of the areas that they can connect with us.
So exciting. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to educate us and the audience of what is coming and what's available so that we can help more people.
Awesome. Thank you guys. Such a pleasure, Jen. Thank you.
These are always such fascinating conversations. So thanks for sticking around for another episode. And I just want to remind you, if you have not gotten into our free Strong Start series, it starts today. And not only do you get videos that are less than 20 minutes going over the foundational movements that we should be doing as we age, giving you the progressions, the modifications, the adaptations for your individual body, you're going to want to get into that. It's going to have workouts included as well as a bonus Q&A only for those who sign up for this series. This isn't just for new beginners. This is for people who are getting back into it, people who have been rehabbing, people who just want to learn a little bit more about cueing and their bodies and ways to prevent pain and injury even as we continue to get stronger. This is so incredible. I'm excited for the community that's coming in. Again, this is completely free, so head to the link in our show notes and join now.